You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up. But that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. We are in the green room. I'm Andrew Wiebe with David Goss and Matt Doyle. That means it's Monday, boys. What's up? 5 days of solo parenthood for this guy. So wow. Hopefully next Monday I'm as buoyant of a mood.
What would be the one thing, if you could be like, Mindy's away, I get to teach this kid to do one thing in one week, what would it be?
Say dada. So easy and obvious.
That was a cliche.
We literally sit in front of this kid and just repeat dada and mama.
So
and
is like, it like?
It's like an arms race to first
say,
word.
Yeah,
100%. It's 100% that. Like, you want, I will have that forever if I get that, and I will hear about it forever if I don't get it. So we are basically going to communicate exclusively along
dead
lines.
Are there any other words that are kind of in the running to be baby's first words?
Our nanny's name is probably
nice,
there, which
nice.
Is the which is the dark
that's
horse.
Pretty bougie, right?
Yes,
there.
That's the dark horse in the mama dada runer. Here is that one could like shatter both of our hearts.
Mm-hmm. Not like what about like a favorite stuffed animal or anything? Like that?
We aren't. You know what? We're not super expansive with our stuffed animal naming. There is monkey. There is
monkey's
giraffe.
Monkey's a good first word.
There is bear. There is elephant. Like, we don't, it's not like Mr. Trunks. We don't do that.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
Interesting.
Kind of like MLS
players.
It's very
casual of you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
You don't respect each person's title. You just call them by what they are. You don't create an individual. How do you have backstory?
All right, host three, that's it. We're going to move on now. MLS weekend coming up. Alexi Lawless stopped by the green room here, his inaugural run through our hallowed grounds. So that'll be in Seg 2. Apologies to Sam Stashkel.
He was less than impressed.
He was not as impressed as I'd hoped he would be, but that's very realistic.
Did you really think that this room, this
we have we have turf on a wall
that's true,
in this
do.
Room.
All right. I didn't think it would impress him, but there is a giant Tupperware of oranges and apples next to you right now.
That's true.
Which you don't get everywhere.
We've got to shout out Kalen Carr for making a stink and getting some healthy food for the folks here in the studio.
Is that what it was for?
A lot of bags of chips eaten over the course of time here. Alexi's coming up. Of course, the mailbag with Ben Bear. Let's talk about the weekend, guys. Week 11 in the books.
Wait,
it was a monster week
11. I want to talk about the week to come. I'm sitting here looking at a map of Russia for the World Cup. Are you guys excited for the U.S. roster release?
Yes.
You're doing that. The fake one. The one that will never come and will haunt our dreams indefinitely. Yes.
Where
do you think
they're
going to
be their training facility? Where's they going to be their base camp?
Right in the middle of the Baltic Sea.
Is it getting real for you guys? Are you a little bit shook?
It's been real.
Are you shook this week? Like,
it's
more
been
shook
real.
This week?
Well, it's tough. You see the tweet coming out, and Costa Rica goes ahead and just names their 23.
Mm-hmm.
I just... You know, we talked about this with Alexi. The U.S. doesn't have, like, we had all these years that kind of feel like we were spoiled in a way, where we were, as a soccer nation, very relevant in these times. And not just, like, relevant within our own community, which, you know, we know we're all talking about this, but relevant in a much greater sense to where you could go talk to your buddies. Your mom might say something about it. Your dad might. And you had these big moments to look forward to, and it's kind of like, I don't know, I'm trying to come up with a good analogy, but this is Extra Time Radio, and I'm Andrew Wiebe, so I'm inevitably
going
to
say,
butcher that one. But it's a moment that you only get every 4 years that really does bring a group of people together in a special way and creates memories and bonds and friendships and something greater than just this little soccer and sporting community we have. Mm-hmm. Like, people
yeah.
coming together and deciding this is my thing, or deciding we're friends, or hey, we had drinks over this game and this is going to become something, or you meet your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your wife, your husband, your, you know, 6 week partner, whatever it might be. Like, this is a time, and we're missing that visceralness. We'll
community.
Still get the World Cup.
We're missing the community part.
We'll still get some of that, and we'll get the games, and we'll get the drama, and we'll love it because we're soccer fans, but we won't get that. We won't ever get this back. And I think that's, like, on that night, not to revisit the night that we all – I think we just have to call it the night at this point. That's, in large part, what I was mourning was, we have this thing that we only get every 4 years that is a trampoline for so many things that we just – we don't get it. It's gone. Swiped away. That's it. So I'm in a great mood. Feeling great. Doyle's not bringing us down here. Let's talk some MLS? Yeah, let's talk MLS. Let's do that. What do we want to start with? Anybody have something to throw out that they think is the most important thing from the weekend?
I mean, it's not one game. Like, I'll say it. I'll plug my column. I think after a third of the season.
Somebody wants some money on that one. Yeah.
After a third of the season, it's time to, like, step back and take a little bit stock of where teams are.
I fully agree with you, and yet there are those teams, TFC's the obvious one, where you're like, but exception.
Yeah.
Right? Like, not you yet. I think there are four or five teams in the league where I'm still like, I don't know.
Who are your question marks? Because Toronto FC have now lost six games. That's more games they lost all of 2015. Yeah. I know there's two basically USL losses in there.
Yeah.
I know the CCL, but they are ravaged by injury. There will be guys coming back, but they're in a conference that I could look at and say – they have to, even if they're close to perfect, they still might not catch Atlanta, New York, Red Bulls.
They're not gonna. It's a question of whether they're like one of the Revs, Orlando City, or maybe Columbus are gonna drop. It's one of those three teams, right? The two New York teams in Atlanta, they're good. They're already in the playoffs.
Yeah, but still, just connect those dots. This is a treble winning team, a team that we basically all sat on this show and said this is the best team in CONCACAF. They just got unlucky in the final. And now we're looking at the Major League Soccer season, and we're saying this team probably not going to get a home game. Might be a knockout round team, could be on the road for the knockout
round.
And
also saying that if they're healthy and they're the sixth seed, they're probably one of the favorites, if not the favorite, to win MLS Cup.
So you both feel very comfortable in the fact that Toronto FC are so good, so deep, so talented, that once they are healthy, this hangover will dissipate.
Yeah.
Will be gone.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, just checking.
100%.
And I think it probably starts this coming weekend. Now, they'll be without Giovinco and Josie, which hurts them, obviously. It's not clear which of the defenders are 100%, but, you know, Chris Mavinga's back. He's probably going to go 90. I think Justin Morrow's going to be back. Michael Bradley gets to move back into, you know, defensive midfield. Victor Vasquez is going to be able to go 90 attacking midfield. And suddenly you're looking, okay, like, this is going to be fine. This is going to be fine. So I don't question that. I do question – I mean, I think the Sounders' injuries are more devastating just because they have less margin for error. And they have a couple of guys who frankly look like they're close to done. Clint Dempsey has one goal in his last 14 MLS regular season games. Like, that's not – he's not Clint Dempsey anymore. I think while the Sounders still have a chance because the West is soft – the injuries they have are worse and longer term than what the Reds, the TFC guys are, and the baseline, they're just not as good a team.
Less margin for error because of who they are, you're saying. But in being in the West, I mean, they're only 5 points out of the playoffs
right now.
Like, being in the West,
I think
they can get it together for 2 months.
I still think the Sounders get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But I'm not as confident that they're actually a good team as I am about Toronto.
Yeah.
Look at everybody else below the line in the West right now. Even above the line, and tell me any of those teams are going to make a bigger difference in their summer moves.
Well,
than
I was going to say, in terms of the asterisk people, like, I don't really know still. For me, in the East, it's above the line. It's Columbus and it's New England.
And Orlando City.
Fair. Yeah. Fair as well. So those are the ones that are bigger question marks to me of how has the schedule played out early on?
Yep.
Have a few bounces gone your way? Have teams not adjusted? Obviously, Columbus is different in this conversation than New England.
So you're saying Toronto FC is going to push in there. Which one of those three question mark teams would you immediately push
out? I think that's what we're trying to figure out, right?
I don't think the Revs.
So I'm going to get back to that. I don't think Columbus. I think Columbus is just too good a team all around, and they have that system that they stick to and that gets them goals. And if you can do that and have a respectable defense, which it looks like they're going to have, I think they'll be all right. That said, they've played one of the easiest schedules in the league thus far.
They've also played more games.
They've also played more games. And they really only have one consistent goal scorer, and that guy's name is Jossie Zardes. So do they have a consistent goal scorer at all? Right? Schrodinger's number nine. But that said, I think they're good. I think they're going to be all right. The Revs have played 6 of 10 at home. They've gotten, pretty lucky in terms of playing NYCFC without Villa and playing Toronto with missing everybody.
And then Toronto with a chance to tie. Sebastian Giovinco goes and, grabs Wilfred Zahibo's face.
Insane.
Michael Bradley says, hey, perspective here. And I'm like, well, the perspective is that's a red card. Don't grab somebody's face. Yeah.
The Revs,
currently grabbing Weeby's face.
I know. I grabbed Bobby Warshaw's face this morning at instant replay taping. You've never seen a person more uncomfortable by that than Bobby Warshaw.
Do not mess with a professional. Don't mess with a professional athlete. He'll destroy you.
He also
you.
Went to Stanford.
Yeah, that's true. The Revs know how they want to play, and they mostly execute it. What worries me about them is they're far overperforming their expected goals in terms of both goals scored and goals allowed. Like it's almost off the charts. So I think they could come back. And then Orlando City have had arguably the league's easiest schedule. They've played 7 of 10 at home, mostly against bad teams. And while the second half that they had against Atlanta on the weekend was encouraging, it came after a first half that was not. I think it's a coin flip between Orlando City and New England for which team ends up dropping, and I think it's going to start happening soon.
So while we're here, let's talk Orlando City, Atlanta. 2-1 to the Five Stripes down there. Chippy game. Got to tell you, don't throw things on the field. Rinse, wash, repeat. Like, come on. By the way, didn't they throw the things on the field after the crazy dive by Will Johnson?
Yeah, yeah. And that came after the crazy dive by El Munir.
Not covering
the
themselves.
The
Will Johnson one was incredible. How do you contort your mind so much to get that angry over a play in which you clearly dove?
Yeah.
And I appreciate the depths to which you will go to deceive the referee.
Hey, man, you got to commit.
But, like, that was a little bit
His
much.
His character had a backstory. He had the whole thing laid out. He hadn't showered in 3 months.
Yeah.
He was ready for it.
Razor blades, don't sell them in this part of Central Florida.
So it's funny because Doyle wrote, and I kind of agree in the way that the game played out in a loss to Orlando, I actually saw more positives in their ability to adjust. They probably gave up 2 really good looks in the second half. Once the ball was passed directly into Sané when he was 1-on-2 defensively, which Atlanta kind of gave them a favor.
Yeah.
But they controlled the game a little bit. They looked better when Uri Russell was in than without him. He showed what he can do. Yotun looked more attacking and more free with Russell in the game. And I thought Miram was pretty good. Obviously, he gets the goal, but he was dangerous. Like, you could see how it could all fit together if there was a defense there.
Rossell's ability to tie it all together looked like a difference maker to me. But that said, there was also a little bit of game state. I think Atlanta got off. They played that first half in kind of cruise control, and they were up 2-0, and it could have been 4. And I think maybe they left their foot off the pedal a little bit and kind of paid the price.
You knew Uri was coming in when at halftime. Jason Christ went on the broadcast and was like, why are we playing so fast? Somebody slow the game down. So he was coming. I continue to wonder, every team that plays Atlanta, how is this Miguel Amirón being so much better than anybody else about finding open space? How does he get in between the lines in the sort of space that he does? If I'm playing Atlanta, that's my number one thing I find a way not to allow. Whether that be because it always comes off a bad pass, a turnover, whatever, and he's just standing there in 25 yards of green.
Once he gets
the ball, you're screwed.
Part of that is just natural speed. You watch when the ball turns over and he explodes upfield. Guys are with him. There's sometimes he's coming
back to the ball and he's all by himself. He has time to gather, turn, and then pick up speed.
Yeah, well, then that's part of it, right, is I don't want to get beat downfield, so I'd rather him check back to the ball and stuff. I agree with you, but there are just moments where the ball turns over and the first pass, whatever it is, to get it into his feet, he just explodes by 2 guys in midfield. And all of a sudden, he's got like these 20 yards to run into, like you're saying, which is where he's at his best. And it makes no sense how he can get in there constantly, but a lot of it's just natural ability.
Anybody have a problem with the first PK? Because Orlando fans predictably are going, wackadoo on that one. I mean,
it was a level of exaggeration from Garza. You know, he didn't get.
He got the arm in the chest.
Yeah,
100%. There was.
I think it was the arm on the shoulder. You know, and like if you're an attacker in the box and you feel an arm on your shoulder up around wherever, you go down. You make it.
Well, can I just – Dom Dwyer would go down.
Absolutely. El Munir would go down. Will Johnson would go down.
A lot of people would go down.
But, like, the point is, like, you can't why are you putting your hand up there?
When the left back is facing his own goal.
Yeah.
By the way.
It's insane. It was insane.
It's crazy. It is absolutely crazy.
Higuita did not have a good head.
Did I read into this too much? And then we'll move on. Yes, Justin Miram scores his first goal, and nobody celebrated with him.
Yes, you did.
I did?
But I had a –
because I'm like – I watched it twice. I was like, wait a minute. It's his first goal. He's been struggling. Nobody's celebrating with him. Like, not even in the
yeah,
frame.
They're losing.
Okay.
They're losing at home.
But it's a rivalry game.
You texted us about this, and Bobby Warshaw was in that group, and I could just see, like, the meme of – like Toy Story with all the little aliens, like one of us, as Weeby was overanalyzing a goal celebration on a highlight. And Bobby's like, yes, read into everything. I could feel it happen.
One of us. Okay, Atlanta, top of the supporter shield right now, 25 points, Sporting Kansas City 2 behind them. Of course, Sporting got the win against them at Mercedes-Benz midweek. Big game, I think, maybe the best game I watched this weekend. I'll put it that way. LAFC, New York City FC. The nightcap on Saturday, this was a good one, man.
It was.
Two good teams that know what they want to do, trying to do it. Like, can we just have a lot of games that fall in those parameters,
please?
Well,
I was talking with the Fox guys here in the studios today, John Strong, Rob Stone, Fernando Fiore, Kate Abdo, and we were talking about it. There are more – like, there's more variance in games in MLS this year than at any point in the past, and you can have a game as – quality and open and like they with intent as LAFC and NYCFC played, like that was just excellent soccer. And then you could see sort of the other side of the like just change the channel. You could see the other side of the coin sometimes. And this was, you're right, Andrew. This one was wildly entertaining. LAFC, you know, we had the salary release last week, and there are very few teams in the league who have like really crystal clear, nice and clean salary cap numbers, and LAFC are one of them, and it should terrify everybody that they're this good this early in their existence and have this much flexibility for the summer window. You know they're getting a DP already. They just signed a TAM striker, and they're an expansion team. They still have a ton of cash that they're sitting on.
By the way, that's a complete different story than, say, NYCFC when they jumped off, Orlando when they jumped off. Atlanta, on the flip side, figured it out and had a platform on which to build, which they have now done with Barco and others.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the platform you build for yourself, these early salaries, will dictate what you do over the next 3 to 4 years as you either try to get out of bad ones or say, hey, we had good stuff, or sell players on for profit or whatever it may be. David Villa scores in this one. Carlos Vela scores in this one. Praise be my fantasy squad. Ismael Tajiri Shradi. With a nice finish.
All he does is score goals.
Like as soon as he brought him in, I was like, oh, he's back, huh?
Yeah.
Bam, goal.
Yep.
Any blame on Tyler Miller on that play?
I didn't think so.
I didn't think so either.
I mean,
he's like scrambling back. He makes a great play to keep it out. And then there's no angle at all.
He's a young keeper, and he's still a little bit of an adventure. But I think Bob Bradley would rather have him out there being aggressive rather than being passive.
I don't think that specific play, I don't think there's anything you could have done.
I kind of feel the same way.
So there are long throws and corner kicks where he gets lost, where you'd like to see him control the box a little bit better, understand when he needs to claim that ball and when he needs to just run into a pile of bodies and get a foul called for him, which is the reality of what that situation is most of the time. But otherwise, I don't think that was. Tajiri Shradi should be a starter when he's healthy on this team. I don't see it right now from other offensive pieces around Villa.
Say their name.
Bergette.
Put their name in. And
Medina. And I was a huge fan of Medina when the season started. And I watch him now, and he only goes to his left foot.
But
defenders know that.
So you're giving the league credit for figuring him out. Maybe you give him more than a couple games to figure out the league.
Okay, that's fair. That's right. He's a young player.
He's a young player.
Absolutely.
And he's like.
Also, David Villa hasn't been around for a lot of this. And that is not to say that like he needs to be relying on David Villa, but everybody on David Villa's team is going to be relying on David Villa to a certain extent.
But they do need somebody else to score. And Tajiri Shradi, even though I don't think he can pass, and he doesn't know how to defend, but he puts the ball in the net. And like,
and he takes guys on.
That helps. Yeah. Just for the record, just so it's out there, NYCFC have had the toughest schedule in the league so far. They've played 7 of their 11 away. They've played some of the best teams in the league away. 2-0 win at Sporting. 2-2 draw at Atlanta. They got crushed, obviously, at Portland and at the Red Bulls, but then they came back and got a 2-2 draw here at LAFC. This team, I know that maybe they've underwhelmed at times in the past few weeks, and they, you know, Patrick Vieira was weirdly talking about how they're tired, and it's too early in the season for anybody to be tired. I'm sorry. But this is a good team.
There have been odd moments defensively where last year they cleaned it up, and then you look at it this year and there are moments where they don't look comfortable in possession, or Ibiaga and Kayens are basically running into each other defensively in moments, which you thought they were over. You thought they'd gotten past that. But they're good at fullback. Tinnerholm's been good. Mm-hmm. Sweat's been playing. You can't deny that he's been playing really well. Yeah. He's earned that spot over Matarrita.
He should be going to the World Cup.
Ben Sweat?
Matarrita's.
Maybe he's Icelandic. Maybe he has Icelandic naturalization. But, yeah, so those would be my only issues, because I picked NYCFC preseason as Shield, and I feel comfortable, like what you're saying, with the way they've handled what they've had to so far and still thinking that they're going to win that.
Any issue putting both these teams in, like, that top tier?
No. That's a no-doubter for me. The other teams for me in that tier, Sporting Kansas City have to be there right now.
Yep, they've earned it.
And I think LAFC have to, too.
Yep.
What they've done on the road, what they did at home against NYCFC.
You're putting LAFC over Red Bulls?
No, I guess Red Bulls would be in that tier as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now that tier's getting really big. So
God,
now it's like
classic
a
classic Weeby. Red Bull's always an afterthought.
I think it's five. Like
five is about
five, six teams, right?
The 23 teams. Yeah, it's about you know, it's not even 25%. You're looking at about 20-ish.
If San Jose only played Minnesota United, they would also
be
the
best team in the league. They would be the best team in the league. They would be the Invincibles.
Yeah,
they would. Except with all wins.
Yeah,
we'll get to that in 1 second. Red Bulls did win 2-1 against Colorado, so good win for there. There was a little video review question mark dab god with the winner. Bobby Warshaw swears on his life that this should not have been overturned. I wouldn't swear anything on my life, but I think he was onside. So that one stood. Let's talk about San Jose, Minnesota. 3-1 winners, PKs for the Quakes. We can talk about Francisco Calvo.
I mean,
he came out again. He's not.
I don't think we're supposed to talk about Francisco Calvo. I think we're supposed to talk about the 11. He seemed to really want us to talk about his teammates rather than himself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's going to the World Cup, so I don't think he has a ton of worries at this point, right? He's pretty good.
Like, yeah.
It worked out for him in a lot of ways. More mistakes, penalty, which I don't, you know, I can't really put this one at his feet. He's trying to challenge for a ball. I can't put the fact that nobody's anywhere close to Danny Huijsen at the top of the box when you're down 2-1. That I'll put at someone's feet.
Oh,
the 11.
I'm told it's Huijsen.
Danny Huijsen?
Huijsen.
Okay, Huijsen. Huijsen.
We'll get
now,
that.
Francisco Calvo should probably keep a cross from coming in on the end line.
Mm-hmm.
So, Minnesota, any conversation we have about them, any time that – I put on the rundown, anytime one of you comes in here or I come in here and say, you know what, it's probably time to talk about this team as a potential playoff team, we table that.
Yeah.
We table that until at any point, they prove they can defend at all.
Yep. I mean, I don't know if it needs to go any further than that.
I would agree.
Right?
Let me ask this question. Sometimes you win games and you don't walk away feeling better. RSL 3-2 over 10-man DC United.
They should feel worse.
Like, is RSL getting better?
No.
And what's with Plata and Savarino? Are they just...
I think they've actually kind of figured some stuff out in recent weeks, and it helps that they have Corey Barrett.
I was
a Stanford guy. But, like, he's been really active. He makes super unselfish runs. He plays smart soccer and seems to be, like, totally content with being sort of the dummy who lets everybody else... He lets everyone else make him better. And like that's the type of forward they need. They don't need someone who's very central. And so it looks to me like the attack has figured some stuff out. Central midfield's a disaster. And Mike Beck, he's got to be held accountable at some point for running Kyle Beckerman out there for 90 minutes, game after game after game, week after week after week. If you watch this team in the last 30 minutes of any game, every game they play, Beckerman has no legs. And he drops deeper, and then Krylak drops deeper, and then the entire team drops deeper, and the defense gets pelted for the final 30 minutes of every single game. And now, it's not all on Beckerman. It's not all on Pecky. There are other issues all over the field. But, like, it starts there. You cannot be weak in central midfield. And look, Kyle Peckerman's 36 years old, and he has a million miles on his legs. He's not the guy he was even 3 years ago. And like, as long as that keeps happening, RSL's going to keep struggling.
What do you think about the Wayne Rooney stuff? We talked about it. Alexi talked about it in here, and you'll hear that in just a second. Taylor Twellman had a very fine rant about it at halftime of Portland-Seattle.
I'd just like to preface this that everyone knows that Doyle's a huge Man United fan. He's always been part of Fergie's army.
Oh, true, yeah.
So Doyle's pretty passionate about this subject.
The Prem is the undercurrent to his life. It's kind of like the aquifer that he draws from. Whenever he needs a little bit extra energy.
Honestly,
he's mainly a Tranmere Rovers fan and then Bristol City, but he sometimes watches.
Honestly, Wayne Rooney is one of the few English players that I've always had sort of a soft spot for. And I think if he had grown up in a real soccer country, they would have built dynasties around him, because I think he's able to do some stuff in like rearranging the geometry of the field that's brilliant, but I don't think that guy's there anymore, not at a high level, not at the level that it used to be. You know, he had that knee injury I think about 5 years ago, and he's never quite been the same. And while he's still a really good player and I think would be an upgrade for DC United, the price tag is eye opening. The fact that he has about 60,000 minutes on his legs across all competitions, like that's about 10,000 less than Lampard and Gerrard had when they came here. And it's about 5,000 to 8,000 more than Villa had. So like it might work out, but like if you're going to spend that kind of money, you probably want a guarantee. And beyond that, it's like, what does DC do? You know, like
well, DC, here's the thing. If DC make this move, and this is what I wrote late last week, this can't be a move in isolation. If this is a move in isolation, it is an insult in a lot of ways to that fan base who have waited so long, who have been patient as you didn't spend money, who have said, okay, we get it. You're in RFK. It's a bad situation for you. When we get this new stadium, things can change. Like, there are so many things that you could do with that money that if you spend it on Wayne Rooney, that better not be the extent to which you spend.
Right.
It better be just the beginning. It better be the cherry on top to a larger project that you're putting in place to provide sustainability for your first team, to provide some funding for your academy.
Yep.
I mean, still one of the few academies that requires folks to pay to be in it. I mean, there's just a lot of things that this club has to do to make Wayne Rooney feel like – not feel like, to make Wayne Rooney a success long term. Or at least through 2020 or whatever it is. Because if you just add Wayne Rooney to this squad, they're not going to be good.
No.
It's not going to be a good team. It's not going to be a playoff team. It's not going to energize your fan base if you're not good and you spend a lot of money on a player who doesn't change that.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot of things
It would feel most like, I think, probably Kaká with Orlando City. And Kaká over the course of three years.
But Kaká would at least – he was at least like this emotional and like – club face that I'm not sure Wayne Rooney has the personality
desire to be. Kaká was literally the best player in the world for a year or two, maybe a year. And Rooney was never that level of a player. And you're right. Like you don't know if he
also had the unfortunate timing side in that Kaká hit it right before Cristiano and Messi.
Right, but the point is like Kaká was a step above what Rooney ever was as a player, and you don't know if Rooney's going to be able to embrace the off-field stuff the way Kaká did.
No doubt. Bobby's not here, so do we talk about the Union, or do we wait for him to gloat about it?
Bobby and I actually had a little bit of an argument about this last night. I made the trust the process joke in our,
easy,
our chat.
Easy
and like obviously that's
you
like,
should have been trusty the process, but I'll let that slide.
Nice. I don't like the branding that much. Nice. But like, I mean, it's you know, with Bobby, he cannot let that go. He gets that in his teeth. And his thing is, like, the process with the 76ers was you know, obviously you accept the losses because you believe it's going to lead to incredibly high upside, long-term building blocks who are going to be worth it. And with the Union, it's like, trust the process in terms of their drafts and their academy kids. And our guys like Trusty and Mark McKenzie, who started together in central defense for this game, are guys like Keegan Rosenberry and Andre Blake, who, you know, draft picks of recent years, are guys like Corey Burke, who came up through USL, and Fafa Picot, who they found, for free, basically. Are these guys worth processing? Is there is the plan worth it? Is it, you know, can you execute this plan if this is a level of talent?
And if there is a plan.
That's that was his other point.
Because the other part of it is like spending some money here poorly and then spending some money here well, but you're not tearing, like you said about LAFC, you're not tearing everything down right now to build a clean roster so that you can go out and add to it. Also in the NBA, it's a finite amount of players in a finite world. Someone's ending up on your team no matter what. That doesn't work. That's not how it works in MLS.
I look at that group and I'm saying, no, this group will not make you a playoff team down the line without a bunch of other stuff. And like, what is the talent accumulation that's happened? I mean, you named some guys there that aren't like high point is good MLS starter. Yeah, that's the high point. That's the ceiling that we're looking at. And if you want to compete with the rest of the Eastern Conference, where do you get the difference makers? Mm-hmm. Are you producing enough high-level MLS starters to have the funds or whatever it is to go get the difference makers or just the project that attracts them?
Right.
As opposed to years of not being in the playoffs.
See that?
You've had years to accumulate these assets, and like Keegan Roseberry looked like a really good one.
Yep.
Doesn't look as good anymore. Andre Blake is a good one.
But he could lose you games too.
He can. He's not without his faults. Austin Trusty, Mark McKenzie, Anthony Fontana, Real, you know, blah 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 blah. None of those guys are like, it's not jumping out to me. They're solid players. They're doing a good job right now in the position they've been put in.
But I think the argument would be like,
what's next?
If they're solid players, right? If they're this team's Aaron Wong and Tim Parker, and maybe there's a Tyler Adams who sneaks in there as well, then that gives you the foundation. I mean, Derek Jones hasn't taken a step forward. That's the issue.
That's
you know, that gives you the foundation to take a swing. And hopefully, you know, the next time you spend $2 million on a guy, it's not Deutsch Call, it's Kaku. You know, so I think that, I mean.
In the meantime, though, good win. Good road win.
Yeah.
First time in a year, but it doesn't feel to me like there's, it's not like good times are not around the bend. Like
a lot of singing.
Yeah. Yes. I do a lot of singing at home. We mentioned Columbus, Jossie Zardes tied with Joseph Martinez.
Give me a second to dunk on the impact.
Go for it.
70 goals allowed in 34 games was a single season league worst record last year by Minnesota United. Through 11 games, Montreal have allowed 26. This team, they're really bad at the back. Like, they're on course to give up 80 goals over the course of a season. That's a disaster. That's a disaster. And I know like they've had injuries and guys underperforming.
Well, they start Raitala at center back.
There's no excuse for there's just no excuse for a team to be this bad. And it's happening week after week after week.
And there's no excuse for you as an MLS fantasy manager to not load up on players playing the Union at this point.
I'm awful at MLS fantasy.
I'm actually doing pretty well.
I checked double week. LAFC's playing twice. I'll throw a player in there. Who do I select?
Blessing.
Lee Wynn.
Lee, what were you doing?
They're going to play him 90 because I didn't think anyone else would play 90 for both. And I was like, he's definitely going to play 90 for one.
No.
Yeah, the rest of my team is trash as well.
He's not. I got a win this week. A couple wins, 119 points. Although Ben the Research Bear is going to come in here and dunk on me because he had 154 points.
Wait,
I had 119.
I had 112.
Okay, so you're not as bad
still,
as this. Yeah,
like,
but still, you
it could have been a lot better.
Jossie Zardes atop the Golden Boot. Congratulations to him. Two goals, two one-touch goals, two good goals in this game. Chicago didn't have much. FC Dallas, winners against the Galaxy. Let's talk that, and then let's get on out of here and talk to Alexi Lawless, I think. Actually, we have Portland-Seattle, which somehow we haven't touched. Which FC Dallas, Mauro Diaz, three assists.
Which is a metaphor in itself.
Yeah,
it wasn't a great
game of soccer.
Which one are we doing? Are we doing Portland, Seattle, or Dallas, LA?
We're doing Dallas, LA, but Sebastian Blanco should have been sent off. Come on, the Chucky mask every time in every league, and it's a yellow card, and then he gets another yellow. But hey, 1-0 win for the Timbers. They'll be happy about that. Go find somewhere the images of Merritt Paulson hugging Gio Savarese after this one. It was hot, and Gio Savarese's shirt tells you that. It was soaked. David Goss-esque.
Yeah, I don't know really where you're going on this one.
Dallas.
I appreciate you getting a dig in there on me. Mm-hmm. It was a long build, but it was worth
you're
it.
Very sweaty
FC
man.
Dallas, winners again. They've lost once this year. Mauro Diaz is back in the lineup. 3 assists. This was another one. If we talked about, is it the RSL 3, DC United 2? I felt a little bit about this game in the same way in which Dallas had good moments, but it didn't leave you convinced.
No. And again, they've played 6 of their 9 at home, and we know they're always much better in Dallas than they are anywhere else. That said, 1-1-1 on the road so far, which isn't bad. I want to credit Oscar Pereja for over the past month finally saying to his underperforming veterans, "You're gonna have to earn your jobs." And to be, you know, be fair to them, Maxi Arruti, Mauro Diaz have both responded. And Roland Lemah has played much better in year 2 than he did in year 1. He had 2 goals in this one. And look, Michael Barrios, who had been untouchable, was on the bench for this one as well. So he's the next up to have to respond. Carlos Grezo responded and played, you know, has played better soccer in the last couple of weeks. And so whatever funk they were in, beginning really last May around this time, maybe June, it seems like they're out of it. But they're not what they were in 2015 and 16. The defense is just too frail.
Kellen Acosta back for this game as well. I just want to throw out a stat about Roland Lemah that's incredible. He scored in 9 games in Major League Soccer. He has scored multiple goals in 6 of those 9 games. That's crazy, man. When it rains, it pours.
Fernando Adi-esque.
It is. LA Galaxy have now lost 4 straight. Zlatan has lost 4 straight for the first
time.
5 of 6. They've given up 19 goals in their first 10 games.
They're terrible.
They're horrible. They're just plain bad.
They're terrible.
They're worse in these first 10 than they were in last year's first 10. Well,
That's pretty damning right there.
That's not good,
that
huh?
That is bad.
Yeah. They spent a ton of money on that defense, and they got a bunch of guys who can't defend. And this is a point Kalen made on Matchday Central. They don't have a lot of really any two-way players. It's either like a block of 5 that goes up into the attack and then doesn't defend, or a block of 5 that's sitting back and defending and can't, you know, if they win the ball, they can't immediately transition. And the game is so much about transitions. The modern game is so much about transitions and being able to win those moments. And the Galaxy don't even exist in those moments, and it kills them.
I don't want to say in fairness because it's not in fairness and it doesn't count, and I don't even know if it would fix that problem, but Jonathan Dos Santos is an elite player. In that way, he's not been healthy. He would be the one that can connect the two, whether with the ball at his foot or in passing the ball. Mm-hmm. That's what he does. But I still don't think that would be enough because you can't have everyone else just play one role. And I don't know that Alessandrini or Ola Kamara, whoever's playing quote-unquote on the wings, would ever be dropping back and playing both ways. And so you look at a team, it's pretty Liga MX style, where it's like 5 will defend, 5 will attack, no midfield, and let's just try and beat you.
At what point?
Unfortunately, they don't play in league.
What point? I mean, I'm not saying it's way too early to be like, oh, this season could be lost. But 2 straight no playoffs, 2 straight no good seasons from the Galaxy after the investment that has been made with the pedigree that they have. They're just 3 points out of the playoffs. The Western Conference will open up a lot of doors that the Eastern Conference never would. But I don't look at this team, and I don't see a direct path to a big jump based on the personnel they have, and I'm not sure based on what they've spent that they really have the flexibility to go out in the summer and say, we can change the personality, the setup, so the personnel within our squad.
The one way I wonder about them is, could they do it in the league? Could they trade these guys? Because they're talented players. Right? And there are pieces that other teams would I would want Ola Kamara, right? And I would take a Dos Santos. I don't know which one. I'd probably take Jonathan.
On the money? I mean.
But, like, if you're a team in this league that's not going out and signing a guy like that from overseas, this is an opportunity similar to, and obviously this isn't a great example, when Chicago traded for Gilberto, right? They weren't going to sign a big-time DP from overseas. There was one already in the league that they could find a way to get into their team. There are players on this team. Alessandrini is obviously one of them, although I don't know if you'd give him up. Where if other teams took him, you could potentially maybe get an MLS-level starter at some of these positions.
The problem is –
because they're playing minus positions.
The problem is then what? You're going to trade for – nobody's going to give you center backs because center backs are the commodity.
You got a starting right back, you would be in a world better than you are right now if you're there. Like
which is like what were you doing with Steven Bedecher who was on the free agency
list this
summer?
How much do you trust the powers that be in L.A. to be able to identify a starting right back?
I do.
That's what this really comes down to, right? Because they threw a bunch of money at Rolf Felcher.
Yeah,
like this is that was their plan, and we've seen them. Look, I know Galaxy fans like to say, "Oh, we played the kids last year, and look where it got us. We were terrible." Well, you're playing the veterans this year, and they're actually worse. So stop blaming the kids. The issue is that there's no structure in the Galaxy to actually develop talent on hand. If you look at every other team that has a long-running established USL affiliate gets players from that USL affiliate, whether it be guys who they pick up off the scrap, like Aaron Long or freaking Corey Burke, who scored a goal this weekend, or guys who are developed through the academy. There are zero academy players contributing to the LA Galaxy. They drafted Thomas Hilliard Arce, who was the best defender in college soccer the last 3 years. And he played really well in the one game that he's played for the Galaxy. And he can't even make the 18. And they have these overpaid, over-the-hill imports just being terrible in central defense every single game. What, like, who do you trust on the Galaxy to actually identify talent? I mean, I love Ziggy Schmid. Like, he's been on the show, and he's a really great guy. He's 11-25-7. 11-25-7 since 2016 as a head coach.
Also on two teams with
a lot of talent.
Yeah, for sure.
40 points from 43 games.
Steven Bedecher was a free agent.
Yep.
I know he went to LAFC, but, I mean, if you call him first, I'm sure he would have been open to that conversation. Brad Evans was a free agent. Sean Franklin's playing for Vancouver. He was a free agent. I mean, there are Jordan Harvey. Maybe you play, find a way, get somebody in there. Jeff Lerner's re-signed with Atlanta. He wasn't coming. But just over the years, you had Jeff Lerner, actually. Yeah. What am I talking about? You had him.
They gave him away for nothing. I fail to see it. The blame is on the front office with the LA Galaxy. Period.
We're going to end there. Alexi Lawless on the other side. We'll be right back. Extra Time Radio driven by Continental rolling on.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Here comes the sun.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental, hanging out in the green room. And I think this is Alexi Lawless' first time here in these hallowed grounds. Welcome.
Yes, this is my first time. Thank you guys for having me. So when I listen to you, to your podcast each and every week, as I do, as everybody should, be it on a run or in my car or anything like that.
I will slip you the envelope after this show is over.
I envision a much more, shall we say, nicer place.
Let's be polite here.
The couches are nice.
Yep.
It's got a green room feel, mm-hmm. but it's almost like an extension of a lavatory, if you will.
We're austere. There are, you know,
which you make it work. You make
it
work.
We don't have the gold plated.
I tell you
knick-knacks
what,
knickknacks and paraphernalia that you do at the Fox Studios.
I am slumming it today. All right, what are we talking about here?
As he flashes his watch,
throws it out there for good measure. Laptop. Yeah. Okay. So. Look, this is a job for you, this broadcasting thing. Mm-hmm. Soccer is obviously a passion and a love. I often wonder when I watch you on air, is there a broadcast Alexi and a at-home, day-to-day Alexi the person? Are they the same thing? Are they different? Are there times when they're the same, times when they're different? How do you balance it?
There is a, for lack of a better word, a character or a personality that is on air. And when you say that, sometimes people cringe because they associate a false presentation or something that's not genuine or dare I say it, even a liar in what they're seeing. That's not the case at all. I am, and I've said this from the beginning, I am an entertainer, I am a performer, and I make no qualms about it. It doesn't mean that what I say can't be authentic and genuine and truthful, but I recognize that the way I say things is as important as what I say, especially in the medium that I'm involved in when there's a where there's a visual part. And I'm not going to apologize for that, and that's a good thing. But anybody in our business, and you guys are all in the business
sure.
too, we all recognize that we have significant others out there. And each one of us at some point has been in a conversation with somebody that loves us and somebody that knows, as you said, the real person. And they've turned to you and they have said, you're not on television right now. And everybody out there that's involved in our business knows that. And it probably applies to a lot of different businesses because we all bring our baggage and our history with us into everything that we do. There is nobody that is unbiased. Everybody has their biases when they're doing their job, but that's a good thing. It's because we're human beings, and I am no different when I'm on camera. But there is a different person that you guys will never know, and that's okay. It doesn't mean that we can't have good conversations. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean we can't talk about things that are important. It doesn't mean we can't get personal and passionate about different things, but I just think inherent in being human beings, we're going to have different sides that show up in front of different people and in different places.
You work at a major sports organization. You worked at ESPN beforehand. What do you think the difference is between what you do and what has to be done with soccer and what other sports analysts do? Do you see any difference between you, an NBA analyst, an NFL analyst?
I mean, there's a general fight and a lifelong fight for relevancy and for attention. And I think that there's probably an ownership that we all have in that we are at times it's defensive in the way that it comes out. But I think we all recognize that we want to protect this thing that is growing. And we want to bring as many people into the tent as possible. But we also, I think we react in order to position ourselves and position this sport in a better way. And I don't think necessarily that all other sports are doing that. They can just kind of go about their business. It's it's something from a cultural perspective and a historical perspective that has always been there, and so it's not going away. But soccer, you know, we are the little engine that could, and we're constantly striving and clawing our way to get more attention and more relevancy in our own country. And it's a constant fight. It will continue long after I am dead and gone. But it's a lot easier than it was been. And so we are making progress. But it's also a fight and I think a responsibility that all of us not only accept, but to a certain extent love and can't do without. I'm always up for the fight. And that's a good thing. It's the great thing about soccer. And it doesn't just necessarily apply to people on television or radio or anything like that.
Yeah.
It is the soccer community that fights, and I love that about what soccer in the United States and Canada is.
So you talked about stepping up to fight and all this in the conversation. I wonder daily probably whether soccer or Twitter is a big waste of my time and everyone else's. What do you think?
I look at Twitter first and foremost as an incredible information source and a very quick information source. And as you know, oftentimes, I'll never forget talking to a GM years ago and telling this GM about a trade that had happened involving one of the players for this GM, and that GM didn't know. And so it's because it happened so quickly on Twitter. That's the good part, is that there's so much information out there and communication and understanding, and that's great. The other way I look at Twitter is almost a video game. I play it like a game in the back and forth that we have. And it doesn't mean that it can't be fun. It doesn't mean that it can't be serious, but you know who I am. All right, you can see it. I'm not anonymous. I am there and consistently. For most of the people that I'm talking to, I don't know who they are. Either just by design.
Either there's an egg.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a fake
like
name.
That.
Or
so if you want to actually have a conversation and sit down and talk about the things that we're talking about, the dynamic is going to be very, very different. And so I look at you while you can entertain me. Which is what a video game does. It's not humans. It's not human beings. As as cool or as fun as it may be, there's still a disconnect because we're not dealing with somebody face to face. And but that's what social media is often about. And it's still, I still love it, and I will admit that I'm addicted to it. And everybody gets juice when something hits or somebody gets retweeted or this is cool. I get it. We're all human beings like that, and we want that validation almost of saying, hey, somebody else out there likes me.
Yeah.
And if it's just a like or a check or a retweet and stuff.
So that GM, I'm shocked. They should have a burner account. What are you kidding me?
They all have burner accounts.
Players, coaches, they all got the burners.
You would be surprised at the ones that rail about this new age and social media and stuff, and yet they will call you or they will seek you out and say, when you said this or when you said this or immediately after you said this, you're getting a call. So they see what – and they should. They should know what's happening. I mean, this is what's happening in their life, in their world. So that's okay. But a lot of them, they are on all the different social media platforms there, even if they tell you they're
not. What's the best call you've ever gotten?
The best call? I have...
You can keep people anonymous if you have
No, look, I've gotten calls from... whether it's calls or in face, I've at one point or another, I have had... I don't want to call them confrontations, but let's just talk about...
heated discussions.
Discussions with, as I said... GMs, I mean, you can't even count the number of GMs, coaches, all types of front office people, wives, mothers, fathers, girlfriends, sons, daughters, every different time. And it happens at different places, whether it's a person actually calling me, whether it's a person coming up to me on the street. It's okay. It's fine. The calls that you get are oftentimes, it's just so they can vent and let them go. I'm not going to change what I said. And they're trying to spin me, and I get that. That's part of the dance that we do. So I let them rant and rave and call me different names. And ultimately, what I find is that they want that opportunity. And if you give them that opportunity, while they're not going to agree, no matter what, they're not going to agree. I think that ultimately they will respect the fact that you take the call, that you listen. And I'm not going to say I don't change, because I can be spun just like everybody else. And maybe they will say one little thing that might get me to think of something
in
a different way.
New information.
Yeah.
New perspective.
Exactly.
You were in that position as a player, as a executive.
Mm-hmm.
What was the moment what was the moment where you wanted to call somebody? What was a moment that you think back to and have any regret about? I think to Garth Lagerwey apologizing to his fan base this week, I wonder if there was an Alexi moment along those same lines when he was in charge of the club.
Well, as a GM, I made so many mistakes. I was very young and certainly inexperienced in that world. I don't regret it. I regret decisions maybe in the way that I went about it, but I don't regret the experience because it changed my life and it offered me a glimpse into the incredible men and women that work each and every day, that don't kick a ball, that are as important to the future of the game and the present of the game than any of the people that do kick a ball. And I learned about, everyone talks about how a front office is just an extension of a locker room. It's just about leadership. No. They are completely different dynamics, and if you come in thinking that you can do that job in the way that you behaved and acted in a locker room, I think you're going to have troubles. And it took a while to learn, because as a player, you're just insulated in that little locker room and team setting for good reason, because you're just worried about that. But you don't have perspective, and sometimes you don't even have respect for what is going on day in and day out to make your life better. And I was exposed to that and really got a crash course in the business of soccer and in that front office type of dynamic.
Well, you mentioned you were young. You come out of playing, and obviously you're a big name. You get hired.
Yep.
That's a big part of MLS now, is executives and coaches are former MLS players, a lot of them going pretty quickly through. How do you see that happening for players right now?
Well, so this happens a lot in life. One of the reasons why I'm talking to you here today is because of the summer of 1994 and the World Cup. I was not the best player in the United States. It was a situation, a timing and circumstance. And those of us that have played, we get benefits. We get doors that will open that will not open for others. Now, they don't stay open forever. And if you don't bring it once those doors are open, first off, you have to recognize that opportunity is coming along. Then you have to take it, and you better be able to perform, or those doors are going to close. And is it fair? No, but it's life. And soccer isn't fair, and life isn't fair. So all of those different opportunities that came about because I kicked the ball, that's an advantage that I have over others, and it's the advantage that a lot of players have. They will be given opportunities based on their experience and what they have done. Whether they have necessarily earned it or not, that's a different conversation and a different debate. But once you get in there, you better figure it out. Players all the time, you know, are asking me, because I'm an old guy, for advice, and I tell them, look, if there comes a moment where you see a jumping off point, take it. Because it might not be there when you want it. As a matter of fact, oftentimes it's not there when you want it. And I've done a lot of dumb stuff in my life, but at least in this moment when I saw this opportunity to go in the front office, for whatever reason, I was thinking clear that morning, and I said, this is a great jumping off point, because I could have continued to play. But what I did in that moment was find a whole new career and extend opportunities going forward. And so if those opportunities come along for whatever reason, whether you think you deserve them or not, really look long and hard. And if that opportunity to take that jump is there, do it. And then grab a hole with both hands and don't let anybody take it away from you.
Put on the GM cap, put on the pundit cap, Wayne Rooney to DC United. Good move, bad move?
It doesn't move the needle for me. Like, you know, He's a good player. Certainly he's not what he was 10 years ago, but Zlatan's not what he was 10 years ago. I get it. I think it really comes down to the money, and maybe this is just an MLS thing where we get so worried about the money. And the reason why is because we recognize what money can do in this league.
We also recognize that it's finite. And yes, also for a team like DC United, it has proven to be finite.
Yeah, and this
year after year after year.
So, and I think, you know, my good friend and colleague Taylor Twellman yesterday was talking about if this is the start of a bigger move from DC, then fine. But if this is just I'm getting the biggest firecracker that I could possibly get get, and boom, it explodes, and then the show's over, then that's a problem. I hope that's not the case. I don't. As I said, how many tickets is he really going to sell? You know, and from a business perspective, it just seems like if the rumors are true, it just seems like a whole lot of money.
I would actually argue. He won't sell nearly enough tickets to justify it. It can only be made if you think he's going to turn you into a winner. And he can only turn you into a winner if you continue to invest.
Yeah, but also, don't think for a second that this isn't being done with the stadium in mind.
Oh, agree.
You need to make a splash, and you need when I started in the business world in the front offices, a wonderful man and a mentor and a very smart guy that worked at AEG at the time, Sean Hunter. From the moment I got there, he said, "Find a way to be relevant," and that's what we are doing basically as soccer. You know, relevancy is so important, and it's the most difficult thing in the world, especially in some of these areas, to cut through that clutter. And so DC United has this wonderful stadium that they're opening. DC United certainly isn't the DC United that we remember from 1996, and they want to do something. Is this big? Yes. Is this big because of the name? Yes. Is it big because of the money? Yes. How long is that going to sustain you? And is it going to make you relevant to the extent that DC United is no longer looked at as just this team that was good a long time ago? I don't know. It's certainly a step in the right direction, but as Taylor said yesterday so eloquently, it's got to be part of a much bigger plan, because if it's just a one-shot deal, then what are we doing?
Garth Lagerwey showed you what relevance is, huh?
I love Garth. I love Garth.
Love Garth, too. I love him, too. And when he said that on the show, maybe it's because I've heard it before, and so it didn't jump off the page to me.
Right.
I didn't recognize that Sounders fans would be so upset. But what they proved is that they matter, that their club matters, that his decision matters, that everything is said and parsed, and that they are relevant.
Yeah, you're like a pusher, right? I mean, you gave us this drug called Seattle, okay? And everybody got addicted to it. And then you said, well, you know, we're gonna cut it in half. You know, we're not gonna give you as much. No, you can't do that. That's not what you have built your entire brand on. And so when you come out and say, yeah, we're not going to be able to compete, and I know, I think I was listening to your show last time where you said, it's not really what he said, is that they're still going to spend as much money. They're not going to spend less money, but it's all relative. Because if everybody else is spending more money, you got to compete, and you got to keep up with the Joneses. And if you don't, then people aren't going to care as much. And you can't blame them, because you spent the last 10 years telling us how great you are, and at times you were great, both on and off the field. But if in this new version of MLS, you're going to be something completely different, and I bought into that greatness, then don't blame me when I get pissed off that you're not living up to what you promised us.
You look at it, though, and I don't know if it's a chicken or an egg thing where look at the top, what, six, seven teams in this league? They're all relevant, right? They're all relevant in their market.
Yep.
So is it because they spend money that they're relevant, or is MLS at a point where if you are competitive in this league, you're relevant in your market? People care enough about this league that if you put a good team out there and you're in playoff games and people show up, then you become relevant, right? You have to find a way to win.
But there
doesn't have to be spending money.
But there is a balance there because, you know, Red Bulls in New York City can struggle with relevancy in New York City, as everything can, to be honest. And you have different cities where you've set the bar, and Atlanta's the new one. So I wonder if it is chicken or the egg. If DC United win, if they spend money, does that make them relevant? If they're just – because they've been a playoff team. They've won. They haven't won pretty.
Yeah,
they haven't won consistently.
RFK for 22 years.
It's a good point as well.
Yeah, and relevancy isn't completely tied to winning. I mean, the Galaxy continue to be relevant even when they're not doing well because they continue to do big things. And obviously they're in a market. And so if you as an owner believe that you know, you'll have your pie chart and you say this is how much of that pie is devoted to winning in that because that's how much we value winning. And yes, ideally you would like to say that's the only thing. No, these are businesses, all right? And these are very, very smart people that recognize that they are selling a product and they know their market better than anybody else and they know their customer. And if by making a choice, either by spending a lot of money or spending a little money, it's going to affect their bottom line and affect their product and therefore affect their business, if they believe that doing it or not doing it, it pushes it one way or the other, then that's what they are going to do. And if you are in a market where it's all about winning, then you're selling a product, you better be winning.
Yep.
If it's more than that, and if it's not just about winning, yes, it's about winning, but we know we're not going to win all the time. Or if it's, you know, we're a small market, and we're just going to compete against the big guys, and you know what, we're just going to be smarter. That in itself is an identity, and that in itself has value. You look at Sporting KC in what they have done. They're not whining and complaining about they're in a smaller market or they can't compete. They just say, you know what? Not only are we going to compete, we're going to do it for less money because we have smarter people here. And you are going to be so proud of us because when we do win, we are winning against teams that are spending so much more money and they can't figure it out. So and then they'll thumb their nose.
And by the way, they spend on the stadium and they spend on
the training
facility.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know, for sure.
Here comes Sporting KC, folks.
No, that's what I'm saying.
You
know, we do this.
That's what I'm saying. Peter Vermes is going to call me by the time I get out of this interview.
It's not a clear picture. You're not looking through that picture window and saying, I can see everything that you've done. We can easily define it and categorize it, and that's what people have to think about with each individual
squad.
Well,
they don't have to think about that. Weeby, come on. That's not what they do. You're asking them to work to do something like that, and that's
not
fair.
I get it. It's the Instagram story, or not even story. It's just create that Instagram as a club. Build your brand, baby. This is what you are.
If you don't, then you can't expect people to understand the layers and the nuances of what you are ultimately building.
What's the national team's brand right now?
Wait, before you ask that, because we've got you here, I want to ask this. We had this debate about Peter Vermes, where Weeby said, I don't know that the U.S. national team job is something he wants to take. And we've talked about this with a few other people where they have good setups at their club. They're successful. You played for the U.S. national team because our argument was it's the dream job for someone who fought for the national team.
Right.
How do you feel about that?
I would love to see Peter Vermes as the U.S. men's national team coach.
But is that for people of your generation, for people that played for the national team, is that if you get the call, do you have no choice? Do you have to say yes?
So people always ask me, would you coach, right? And I tell them the same thing every single time. I don't want to coach. I love what I do. I am a junkie for it. I don't want to do anything else. You guys know we meet a lot of people in our business that are just passing through and using this as a way station. And you can get away with that for a little bit, but ultimately it will manifest itself in your performance and you're cheating yourself and the viewer. And I don't want to do anything else. This is what I want to do. If I wanted to coach, I will do everything in my power to make that happen. Peter Vermes, okay, he wants to be where he is, and he wants to coach. Now, as it comes to the – by the way, I only say that because if the national team called me today and said, we want you to coach, I think there is something more to the national team. And that would – it was almost a responsibility and a service to your nation in terms of what you're doing coaching the national team. So that's where it's a little bit different. Peter Vermes – I recognize he's got such a great gig. I mean, and he's so valued. He's a legend there at this point. Why would he want to leave? I think there is a desire, as for any competitive person out there, to do something bigger. And this certainly would be bigger. But I value him so much that I say, all right, why not have him coach both? You know, why not? Why being the coach of the national team, I know obviously people say it's a full-time job and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't have to be. I would have no problem if – because in order to get that quality, if we had to say, all right, but you still get to keep your position or you get to go back to your position after the cycle or something like that, I mean, do something creative. If you think that he is that good, and I do think that he's that good. He's not the only one that's that good. But if tomorrow they name Peter Vermes as the coach of the U.S. men's national team, I would have no problem with that, and I think it would be successful.
What's the national team's brand right now, to go back to what we were talking about? What's the because this is not the national team of before, when you're saying we're on the rise, we're making every World Cup, we've got a chance to do bigger and better every time we step on the field on the biggest stage. We've taken a – you know, got slapped out a little bit here as a soccer nation.
Yeah, and you know, this whole silver lining type of narrative, which is true, that it will make us look at ourselves, reassess, reboot, all the different words that you have, and maybe at a time when we need to, and maybe we ignored some things. That is all true. When I look at this national team, and I've said this before, right now I just believe that the national team for too long has tried to be everything to everybody. And in doing so, we spin our wheels, we waste resources, and in a country our size, and I know, you know, I talk about this, and you know, people call me all sorts of names because they misinterpret what I'm saying here. In a country our size, with its incredible diversity, and our diversity makes us the greatest country in the world, but it makes it incredibly difficult to pick 23 players to represent this country, because if I took everybody in this office, in the MLS offices here, and asked them what good soccer is, I'm going to have a different answer from absolutely everybody. There's no collective understanding, but there's also no collective agreement as to how we want to play, what we want to look like. Because in order to do that, if you do that, you become more exclusive as opposed to inclusive, and that scares everybody. But I just think if we really are concentrated on being a successful means winning national team, we have to say, you know what, this is how we're going to play, and this is what we want, and this is the template that we're going to go by, and recognize that there are going to be players that don't fit into that. Maybe even some really, really good players, but we've tried so long to fit everybody in, and in doing so, I think we've done ourselves a disservice. And I know, as I said, people will call me names, and people will scream and yell, and don't kill the messenger. I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, but that's the reality. Our size makes us incredible, but it's also such a challenge, which is why I say, we might be better as a national team if we just took it from the New York metropolitan area. Just took a national team from the or Southern California. You know, could pick whatever region
well,
you that you want.
You just picked the two that everyone's going to get so upset that you said.
Everyone talks to me about Iceland. All right, fine. Let's go to North Dakota and pick 23 players and just concentrate on getting those 23 players as good as we possibly can, because there's only 330,000 people in Iceland, and yet they are able to do the things that we do. I know it's an apples and oranges thing, but I'm just using that as an example where just our size is so difficult to wrap our arms around and to deal with it. And everybody says, we should be better. Well, we should be better, but we are dealing with circumstances, not the least of which is history, but circumstances right now that most other countries, if not all other countries, don't.
When I think about this conversation, and I get what you're saying, my viewpoint of it is to kind of flip that and say, embrace that diversity. Produce as many players of quality that we can that fit into different buckets. And sorry, sometimes good players don't make it. And that's where the club system comes into play. Each individual coach, organization, whatever, they set their tone. And in their little North Dakota, they produce players that specialize in whatever they need them to do to become good professionals. You hire a coach for the national team, he makes a choice.
Right.
But I'm saying we don't have to be dogmatic about what that is as a nation. And we'll never be dogmatic because we'll never agree. So you'll never get
ultimately
momentum.
Ultimately the national team is going to hire this GM, okay? And then that GM is going to hire
and he'll
a coach.
Choose it, but he's not
They're
forever.
Choose it.
But he's not forever. So which is why everybody else keeps doing their thing and somebody has tough decisions to make. And sometimes Bill Billingsley or whoever it is gets excluded.
You're not embracing diversity by going about it by that.
Well, he is saying there's no such thing as the American player, which has been the conversation, right? It's like, let's create this top-down style in American player. I think no one thinks that's possible. And we'd be saying it's a waste of resources because in 4 years a new coach comes along and wants to play a different style.
I'm saying produce as much as you can, embrace every different kind of player, background, whatever. We've just got to come to
but
the
you're
point
not embracing
and
it from
acknowledge
a national team.
It. Well, that's where we got to acknowledge that there are only 23 spots and there is somebody at the top of the pile who says, this is what I
value. I just want to make sure we're clear about this. So the embracing that you are talking about happens at a club level or a professional level.
Correct.
100%.
But I think you embrace it at the national team as well and your hires at GM and coach. And you say, these are the guys that can best use all these variable resources we create Invariably, though, one
but
of those.
No, we're right back where we started. Now you're trying to be everything
fine.
To everybody.
I know, but I don't know. We're not trying to be everything. We're trying to be whatever that coach says we should be, and we have the resources to do it.
If I told you that the national team was only going to play with left-footed players, okay, and you're a right-footed player.
Well, I'd say the coach is an idiot.
Okay, but fine, but that is an identity.
Sure,
okay?
Sure.
This is how we are going to play. So now you don't have to deal with all the right-footed players. Or those right-footed players better adjust.
Well, that's the other thing, right? A great coach should be able to bring other assets into a team. You've got a coach with a pure philosophy who believes in passing and movement. You still can find a way to bring a Pablo Mascherania
okay,
and
but
make
this
him
is an
effective
a, okay,
when
it's
you
an extreme
him.
With the right and left-footed
right.
player.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you have a player that thinks about the game in a completely different way, we can recognize that that player has value, that player might become one of the great players in the world. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that player is appropriate for the national team. The national team is not the best 23 players. It's the best collection of 23 players. And so that means that there's some very, very good players that just because, I don't know, maybe we're playing a game that's all played in the air.
No,
if you're not good in the air,
I completely agree.
Why should
you.
I bring you in? You could be messy. But, and why should I bring you in?
But the National Federation should still be a part of developing the wide gamut. As opposed to saying we are a direct team.
Okay, also, federation as opposed to the national team.
The national team coach, though, I'm with you. He
okay,
has
got
one
it, got
mandate, which
oh,
is
yeah,
to bring
yeah,
the
yeah.
23 that he thinks
yes.
is best prepared.
Well, I mean, just
we're heated right now, and there's no conversation like this that we'll have this summer. That sucks, man. That's
why? Why won't we have this?
I mean, we'll be talking about the World Cup.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Come
so
on. We're not gonna
Alex,
have
I got to tell you.
Yes.
A lot of people really like watching you on the Fox commercial that says we're all in Mexico. How did that feel?
I was telling you about the persona, or if you will. Look, I recognize that the things that I do and the things that I say at times are designed for reaction. At times are titillating. But in this one, I want to be really, really clear. So for the people that haven't seen it out there, we have a Fox promo right now that talks about we're being all in on El Tri, on Mexico. First off, from a business standpoint, that makes complete sense. I think everybody recognizes it. That me, as a former U.S. men's national team player, is on the television saying that, I think, is where people get a little crazy. Just because I am excited to see Mexico play doesn't mean if Dave Sarakin called me up and said, hey, we need you to play for the national team and we have a game against Mexico, that I wouldn't want to beat those guys up and down the field. So I get it. I understand people that believe that there should be this separation.
Oh, I was going to say most of my reaction has been Mexico fans who love watching you have to say that.
Yeah, I mean, well, first off, Mexico fans, you should be so lucky as to have me ever possibly being involved with El Tri. So yeah,
you know what? You have gotten. Well, I guess you guys didn't get past to the round of 16, but it's neither here nor there. I was just gonna, I was like, yeah, but they did get past the group stage. But
it's
then,
fun.
No, it's
well,
the same
I also will.
Marquez
I'm gonna
still play.
Yeah, that's
play.
True. That's true. I will tell you this. Tease for a little later. There is more El Tri. In my future going forward. So tune in this summer. If you didn't like that, you got other stuff coming that probably will not have you feeling good about me. But you probably didn't feel good about me anyway.
One more, we'll get you out of here, Alexi. We appreciate your time here in our austere janitorial quasi.
I might have been a little harsh. I might have been a little harsh. It's actually
smells
a nice
fine
room.
In
there's
here.
Turf
smells,
on the wall.
Yeah, it smells great.
You have a turf on the wall, which a corner of the
hard
field.
Hard to explain.
Initially, people would look at it and say, "Well, it's a baseball diamond." No, it's not. It's a corner of the field. So right.
Yeah, I've never thought the baseball.
Yeah, there's a soccer ball glued to
it
too.
Soccer ball
Russia.
Yes.
Big tournament. Big job.
Yeah.
Big preparation. How do you? Look at, and this is a job. How do you look at this and prepare for this and make sure that you are, as you say, at the top of your craft and hit the ground running?
So what I have done, and I've done this so many times now, is I start about 6 months out, and it's just constantly reading anything that you possibly can, listening to anything you possibly can. And basically what happens in a World Cup is you accumulate this incredible base of knowledge and through your research. And it's kind of like this iceberg thing where in TV in general, and the amount that you accumulate, you only actually see the tip of the iceberg on air. But all of that research and time and energy it helps you because it gives you a base and it gives you layers and nuances and all that kind of stuff. But here's what happens. The first week of the World Cup is always the hardest because you're previewing and you're trying to figure out what's going to happen. And then the World Cup starts, and the World Cup and the soccer gods, they take you in completely different directions. You have to have done that work in order to go on those directions. But once it happens, you kind of let the paths go where they are and let the stories develop. The world is talking about these things. It's such an incredible job. I don't take for granted the fact that I have the greatest job in the world. I remind myself every single day that there are people out there that would give their left arm to be in this position. And I have a responsibility, as we all do at Fox, to bring this World Cup to the United States. We're going to try to not just live up to it, but surpass what people have done in the past, whether it's ESPN or anybody else. But we're also going to do it in a Fox way. And at times, it's going to rile people up. We don't apologize for the fact that we are disruptive in the way that we go about doing things. We look at being disruptive as a positive, and we're going to continue to do that. Some people are going to like it. Some people aren't. But I bet you they'll all watch.
Now, you mentioned past World Cups. You've worked World Cups before. Mm-hmm. Few people are new. What's the advice that you've been giving to people?
Yeah, so people ask me all the time. So it's ritual. Ritual routine, because it is a Groundhog Day type of existence, the best Groundhog Day ever, but it's the same thing over and over again. I have been all over the world. I've never been to Russia, so I can't wait to go to Russia, and that as big a star as anybody on the field will be this country of Russia that we talk about seemingly every day, and certainly for a guy growing up in the 70s and 80s in the U.S., what Russia was, and mm-hmm. doing that compare and contrast. But you got to have a ritual. So whether it's when you work out, when you eat, when you drink, all the different stuff, but getting on that routine of day in and day out and sticking on it. And it's hard sometimes because you get pulled in different directions. And nowadays we're doing so much content, as you know, and there's what is content now? There's so many different versions of it out there. You're just constantly banging out as much as you possibly can. And I guarantee someone's going to get sick. Somebody's going to get in a fight. Somebody's going to get sent home. Somebody is going to fall in love. Somebody's going to fall out of love. All of these different things happen in this six-week span that you are in close quarters with so many wonderful people that are working to make you look good and ultimately to make this production look good. And I think it's going to be wonderful. Yeah, it sucks that the U.S. team's not there. And we will not just put that in the corner. We recognize it's important to talk about it. And it will inform some of the things that we talk about. But I don't think, going back to the diversity of this country, there's no country in the world I think that's better prepared to handle a World Cup without a men's team than maybe the United States, because of our direct affiliations that we have and connections with other countries, but also the indirect ones. Some people just saying, hey, I like this team. Yeah. I like the chant. I like the uniforms. I like their good looking, whatever it ends up.
That happens when the U.S. is there anyway.
Yep.
Alexi Lawless. You can catch him on all of Fox Sports' soccer coverage, from Champions League to MLS to the World Cup. Also, State of the Union podcast. Go subscribe. Download that, baby.
Yes, definitely. And I just want to say, you guys, you're doing a wonderful job. And you and everybody in here that's working day in and day out. Talk about cranking out content. You do a wonderful job, and you keep us all informed. And I know at times we all take crap from different people about, where our biases are, and, we're shilling for this and shilling for that. But the reality is that what you guys are doing is important. It's a voice, but it's a really important voice in this incredible soccer culture that we have. So thank you so much for all the work that you guys do.
No problem, man. Envelope will be coming in about 5 minutes. Thank you so much. Mailbag's next. Stick with us.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Wonder Woman, don't you ever forget. You're divine and he's about to regret. He's a
back now at Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Alexi Lawless out the door, in his place. Ben, the research bear, the king of takes, the target of one, Luca Dinfield.
Technically two entertainers.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Alexi said he
plays a character.
You'll never really get to know the real Alexi. You just see the one
that's
that he
plays on TV.
That's the
exact opposite of me. I feel like
wear your heart on your sleeve.
Yeah, everyone knows who I am. If you run into me in the street, I'm going to act the same way I act on the show.
This is who I am.
Wilson
knows. Ben Bear. We've run into each other in the street.
People have run into me, no.
Who's Wilson?
Literally
Wilson
run into you?
Are the Rebels fan. That was sitting next to us at the Olympia CCL game.
Any relation to Luca and Dinfield?
I was sitting separate.
Oh, yeah. What?
And he said, any relation to Luca and Dinfield? Are these
I
real
mean,
people
no.
or fake people?
Well, we don't know.
This is Ben's hater.
We have a hater in our
midst. Well, we don't. You do.
Well, I'm saying, yeah, like, but like, this is generally what we have to deal with as a group. Well, the hater is hate towards me,
well,
which I can handle because I'm a man.
Gotcha.
I'm 40.
31 tweets, 3 people he's following, myself being one of them, which puts me in the group of people who could be using this guy as a burner.
Yeah.
1 follower, lot of
Wait,
likes of Matt Doyle content.
There's a
so
follower?
There's 1 follower, but I think it's a bot probably.
Got it.
Lots of likes of Matt Doyle content. So you've challenged him in the break to prove who he is and
who
prove
are you
himself.
Talking about right now?
Lucan Dinfield.
Wait, so I just saw this.
An anonymous Twitter personality.
Just texted, had tweeted at me, though, and said, thanks for introducing MLS fans to @Lizzo. She has great music, which is true.
So you might be the person running this burner account.
No, the person
that was a great acting job.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't be. I'm not that.
The person clearly is a devoted follower of the show, though he might have given up the show since I continued to appear on it.
I don't really know.
Did say that if you showed up on this Monday, he was probably.
I'd like to start with this. I wouldn't assume that Lucan's a male's name.
Okay.
True.
Because we have no idea.
We don't know. Never That's a good point.
That. It's close to Lucas,
but
no one knows.
Yeah, there is a challenge to. I don't know how it is possible to show that you are real.
Yeah.
Because you could just take any picture from anywhere across the internet and just
call
this me.
So set your parameters. They have to have a chocolate croissant sitting on that day's newspaper.
Oh, right. Definitely the day's newspaper.
Half a pastrami sandwich.
Nice. We'd be going to eat the whole thing.
I had the other half. That's how I know who Lucan Dinfield is. No, it's not me.
It's going to be Cam. It's definitely Cam.
I'm getting started.
Cam is just out here just tweeting.
Yeah, information warfare from an early, early age. Let's get into the mailbag here. 401-206-0-MLS.
Can I ask you an honest question, though?
Extra time at MLSsoccer.com.
What if it was the mother of your child?
Wow.
Would you be proud or upset?
I would be more than proud.
I think you would be. That would be the proudest moment of your relationship with her.
I would. You know what? We would shotgun wedding time.
But besides the birth of your child, they're creating a burner account to troll me.
Top
burner account.
Got it.
A shotgun done. Easy. What do we got?
First thing was a text waking up to this morning. Might be my favorite new rivalry, NYCFC versus LAFC.
It's not a rivalry. It's just a good game.
Let me do the Doyle thing. Where he just makes random noises before he actually answers the question.
And then he says Jay Chapman's better than Fernando Adi.
Yeah.
He didn't actually say that, did he?
No.
even though you can never be sure, though.
Well, to be fair, I think that's more of an indictment on Fernando Adi's play over the past year and a half.
Here's something that you should bring to the show on Mondays. Yes. Things that Bobby Warshaw or Matt Doyle would say about the weekend.
That's a good bit.
Yes, we just invent
things. I'll do that from now on.
Okay, just one from each.
No, I can't do that off the top of my head right now.
Correct.
I did spend all day yesterday with Bobby, and there's
Weeby stole the one this week, too.
Yeah. So
we talked about it in the first segment.
What did I say?
Your Justin Miram's goal celebration analysis.
I mean, Bobby has some thoughts on Clint Dempsey as a player that we all know.
Oh, well.
That were spoken.
That's good timing.
That's perfect.
Like.
Nick Edwards. So he followed up his original email, which I liked but didn't have time to read last time because we spent like 40 minutes on the Sounders. And he said, another 90 minutes, another scoreless Dempsey. You guys got to put this in the mailbag, or am I on crazy pills? So this is the original email. Garth said the plan to buy an 8-figure DP has been in place since February. I call BS. Either a DP signing fell through before they had to make a decision on the Dempsey's option, or the front office wanted to reduce costs by making the summer transfer window acquisition all along. You guys with me so far?
I think so.
In either case, Dempsey led the attack for 75 minutes against Columbus. This is when he sent this email, so last week. And the game ends scoreless. Sounders travel to Toronto without him, score 2 goals, and nab 3 points on the roll. We can all say what we will about the Crew's low block being difficult to break down or Toronto being depleted by injuries. So were we. No Dempsey, Lodeiro, Kim, or Alonso. The fact is Dempsey no longer fits. He either occupies the same space as Lodeiro but covers less ground and isn't as fast, or he drops too deep, congests the midfield, and isn't available to be up top to create assists or goals. I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I don't think Seattle should have signed Dempsey's option. And as you can see from the emails below, I felt this way for a while because he sent a couple. Is this confirmation bias? 6 of the 7 Sounders goals this season have come when Dempsey is off the pitch. Is this why Seattle doesn't have an identity?
2 things. First, let's go back to the original, the first question. LAFC, NYC, not a rivalry. Just a game, good game between.
Get that out of there.
2 good teams.
Done.
That's it. Second thing is first, go read Charlie Davies' column on MLSsoccer.com about this situation. You know, he kind of gets into what happened on Sunday mostly and how what it's like to play as a lone striker, which is really interesting stuff, that stuff in particular.
Also, Charlie Davis is a different lone striker than Clint Dempsey would ever be.
So I was talking with him yesterday, and that's what I was trying to get out of him. And it's like, you were so reliant on speed to be a special player, which you were. You know, how do you deal with, you know, Dempsey, that's not his game. Look, I think there are a couple of things here. You know, I think the front office definitely, you know, front office is across the league plan. They have long-term plans. So, you know, I think they were looking at entering 2018. They were saying, you know, Clint Dempsey's probably going to be at the World Cup. And he's maybe going to play 1,500 minutes. I don't think they were thinking in December that they were going to enter the season without signing a striker. I don't think that's – I think they were going to sign – I think their thought was, we're going to sign a striker. Dempsey's going to play 1,500 minutes. We'll get some good minutes out of Will Bruin.
Maybe we'll find
a winger.
Yeah,
we have Jordan Morris. Jordan Morris is going to be a star for us in 2018. I think that's how they entered the season. I don't know that. That's just me saying things. But if you're looking back at what kind of transpired, I think you can safely say that maybe something fell through. We don't know.
I would be shocked that this Sounders team, after two appearances in MLS Cup, knowing that the league is pushing the envelope, everyone around them is either getting better or spending the money to conceivably get better, would sit back and say, we want to be uber-reliant on Clint Dempsey in 2018 when he's a 35-year-old.
Exactly.
I just don't see, no matter what you think about Garth Lagerwey and the job he's done with the Sounders, I just don't see them making that sort of decision. Now, whether that means things fell through, whether that means it was the Morris injury that hurt him, the fact of the matter is now that they are over-reliant on Clint Dempsey, in my opinion.
Well,
they don't have pieces.
Are they over-reliant?
They don't have pieces around him to do similar.
Like they're not
relying on the goal scorer?
They're not relying on anybody. I think the plan the last two games wasn't even to score goals. The plan the last 2 weeks was sit back, maybe we'll get something, and they did on, you know,
but that's kind of
some very bad Toronto center back play from two players
who weren't
center backs, and they didn't create literally anything on
if you're the Seattle Sounders, that's not like, I know that circumstances landed you in this position, but the fact that you're there, that is the problem. That you're not able to, as one of the kind of shining lights in this league, and look, regardless of what Garth said, regardless of what you take away from that, that is who the Seattle Sounders are and have been and should continue to be based on the money that they've spent. You shouldn't be going into games saying that, and that's a bigger issue between personnel.
I think that's a bigger discussion than just Clint Dempsey. Like, why are you entering? You're the Seattle Sounders. You make the playoffs every year.
Is Clint Dempsey?
You're really going to go into?
Is he done as a difference maker?
You're asking me now.
I'm asking anybody, but you're looking at me. So,
no, but he's not. Like you guys are saying, he's not the guy you build it through. He can still change a game as a piece alongside your core players. For example,
he's a luxury player.
Yeah, exactly.
We've been saying, I don't know how long we've been talking about this, but he's a luxury player. That's what he is. He's not. You don't build around him. You are going to get special moments. He's going to win.
But he hasn't always.
I mean, 2014, 2015, 2016, even, I'd say, before he had the heart issues, he was a player. He was the team that he was built. The team was built around him. 2016, they weren't that good before he got the heart issues.
Yeah.
But they were built around him and what him and Oba were able to do. I don't think they entered the past two. I think Jordan Morris was their guy. He was the guy entering this season.
Which also opens up a lot more questions.
Jordan
too.
Morris was a disappointment last season. We all know that. And I think they thought maybe that could change this season. Lodeiro's, you know, we all think he's a special player. He is a special player.
And they get through until they get the striker
and
the winner or in the summer.
The striker or the winger, and they stay in 5th, 6th, 7th place till the summer, get the striker. Dempsey's coming back from the World Cup. He'll take a couple weeks after the World Cup. I'll hit August, hit the last 3 months of the season, and Dempsey's going to get...
And Victor Rodriguez is in a wash. And Wolf Ikram
hits the ground running a little bit better.
He was good. He's starting to look much better. And you got to give those guys a little bit of time, but Sounders in trouble. Let's move on. We've beat that one today.
I traveled from Missouri to Atlanta to see Atlanta take the L, which they didn't receive well, by the way, last week.
This is a Sporting KC.
Where do you rank Sporting among Eastern Conference teams?
Eastern what?
Among Eastern Conference.
Slide long. Well, in the league, I think because we keep saying the East is better, and then they went and beat the best team in the West.
I don't know that there is a team that sits on top and is just so utterly dominant that I would say this is by far the best team in the league. It might have been Atlanta, but then you go to Atlanta and win with some extenuating circumstance, and I think that one gets shot. Holes get shot in it.
He then said his dad has the unpopular opinion that Toronto is no longer the best in MLS. Is he right or wrong?
I don't think we know.
I think he's right.
Hmm.
In a very present day here and
just
now sense.
Tigres in America. Just
present day here and now sense.
America
I think
just lost to Santos.
Yeah, but look, soccer is
because America's
sports are not sports are not the sort of thing where I'm willing to say like, hey, 3 months ago you did this, so you're now the best. Toronto FC
That's
could
not three
yet
months ago.
Whatever it is,
it's
Toronto
season.
FC could yet be the best.
Yeah,
they are not right now.
But that's BS.
That's not how we talk about
sports. What do you mean that's BS?
Because you will, because you will say this team is good, and I'll say, well, what can they win the playoffs? And you will say, well, they beat Atlanta in a big game two weeks ago. That's in the past, right?
2 weeks ago.
Look, I think
2 weeks ago and different personnel
is
not the same.
The way that I do this is like, what is everyone's – if everyone's playing their A-plus game.
What's their ceiling?
What is it? So like when – like this is like what I – this is the example I use back in like –
that's nonsensical.
2011 to 2014, this is the example I use for the Galaxy all the time. Because the Galaxy didn't always play well. They would start off season slow, especially those last couple of years. And I'd be like, well, the A-plus game is still way better than everybody else in the league. And that's the example I kind of use. And I think Toronto's A-plus game is still probably the best in the league, in my opinion.
I would agree with that. But that's nonsense.
But that's still possible.
Like, sure, a lot of things are possible. So is them having an F game. So is Jozy Altidore getting hurt again. So is Sebastian Giovinco saying, I don't care anymore. I'm just going to touch people in the face and take reds. Like, I'm just saying there's no guarantees.
Yeah,
and so right now,
like,
no. I'll take it.
I understand the Jozy part. But in general, it's not like you're looking at a bunch of injury-prone players, a bunch of players who are over the hill. Like, they are still – in their prime, they're
Victor
still the same.
Victor Vasquez has like back nerve issues.
Okay,
yeah, but if you have Chris Mavinga, Drew Moore, Hagelin, or Zavaleta in any of these games, I think they get more points.
Yeah.
Also, Sporting Kansas City is right there with the New York teams. I'm not sure they're Atlanta or, you know, in my opinion, Toronto, but I think they're right there with the New York teams.
There's
Columbus
no
teams.
Single team on top, so they're right there with Eastern Conference best.
Sporting Kansas City, by the way, there was some talk last night in the office about the Shield, and a video came out of it. I think, you know, you look at Atlanta, you look at the 538 numbers, they're heavily favored to win the Shield. But if you look at what Atlanta has to go through in terms of schedule and playing all these East teams that are much better, and East is much better. I don't care what the record says right now between East and West, but they are. Just watch the games. Sporting Kansas City gets to play all these West teams that aren't good the rest of the season. So I think if you look at they could maybe get the Shield. I think they maybe should be favorites almost.
Maybe almost.
Slade Long finishes
straight from
his
mouth.
SKC. I want to say favorites of the Shield, but then I'm like.
He paused hard. You paused. You step to the plate.
If you
hit time on the referee and stepped right out.
You're like,
I'm not ready.
I mean, I'm not even guaranteeing. I'm just saying favorites.
Now we're pulling you for a lefty.
Wow.
I don't trust you.
SKC fans should be thinking of the Shield.
Let us know what you think. Kalen Carr or Ben Bear on Mondays in the mailbag.
Slade Long wants to finish this up with P.S. Weeby, adopt me. And he called himself the Missouri Rhino.
Really?
Maybe because you're so enthralled by the Toronto Duck. I don't know.
The Missouri Rhino.
Yeah, and he
and the Toronto Duck.
Said, adopt me.
I will bring you into my my MLS zoo, of which ducks and rhinos exist side by side.
Wait, is he saying, like, adopt him, like actually adopt him?
No. I mean,
you don't want that.
No, I don't. True.
Well, I mean, Weeby's starting to build his own five-a-side team, so he's working on that. I know this was a joke when Doyle tweeted Giassi Zardes and Corey Baird will lead the USMNT attack to World Cup glory this summer, but I want to know if you guys actually think both of them could even make a hypothetical World Cup roster for this year or going forward for the U.S. national team. Love the show, guys.
I mean, Giassi certainly could. I don't think you could throw that out. He's tied for the lead in the league in scoring. He's playing a position he should. U.S. national team striker pool we've talked a lot about it being so good, but it's – Bobby Wood
had two goals this year.
Had a tough one.
If you go back to 2014 when, you know, Jurgen Klinsmann decided to not bring a player second hold up forward to the World Cup and how much it hurt us.
Yeah, Giassi for sure.
Giassi would be that.
He's
probably
got experience.
Be that guy if
Corey Baird, no.
We're announcing the roster today.
Weeby, like Corey Baird has started 4 games in MLS. You must therefore anoint him as the next U.S. national team star.
Corey Baird, yeah. When,
he's
why,
having a good
why
start.
Why are you talking about Corey Baird at U.S.
What Corey
team?
Baird's success says to me is, one, Corey Baird has adapted well. He, like, works hard. He's gotten in good positions. Had a couple good finishes. Two, RSL's forward situation is bad.
How much are they paying?
I think they're paying
Artunio
like $1.1 million.
That was one of the ones that I
$1.1, and Major League Soccer is still paying Yura Movsisian.
Yeah.
So, like, center forward has been an issue.
For sure.
And Luis Silva's the other option there, not a center forward.
Well, I never really thought it was.
Not a center forward.
I think that was.
You don't have to denigrate Luis.
Last year.
Don't denigrate Luis Silva, right?
Mike from South Carolina, which mistake is worse? A second yellow for taking your shirt off after scoring or a straight red for hands to the face after scoring? Or are they pretty much
the second yellow for
sure. Second yellow, 100%.
The second yellow is no doubt. Like, you're on a yellow. You know that what happens when you take this off. That's for sure. Sebastian Giovinco was completely out of line, and that is just a silly play to make when you know you're about to get chucked. But that's the level of frustration that he's having within the team, both his personal side, the contract side, and everything else, and then also the lack of success they're having. But come on, Sebastian Blanco is the like saved from boneheaded decisions guy of the weekend. Throws on the Chucky mask, clear yellow, obvious yellow. How do you not get a yellow there? And then the crazy tackle at the end, like, should have seen red.
The instant replay producer, Rich Hernandez, who was in the office yesterday watching the games with us, was very upset about the lack of yellow. He literally brought out the IFAB rule book and was, like, going through it, trying to find the exact rule, which was
We didn't talk about Seattle-Portland much in our MLS rewind.
I don't think there's reason to.
Okay. All right.
I mean, when I was in the office today, I was watching the game and I semi-dozing off a bit. I'm not going to lie. It was a long day, you know.
I got Mother's a nap day. On the couch. I got one.
I was back in Westchester for Mother's Day. I came in. It's a rough life.
You ready to move on?
Inside info there for Declan Field.
Yeah, Lucan Denfield.
Yeah.
How long can Calvo stay on the team sheet when he keeps giving away goals? That's for this week.
He's in the World Cup squad for Costa Rica.
So he won't be in the team sheet.
He'll be gone in a little bit. We'll see if results change. Some names on the provisional World Cup squads. These have been announced as of right now. We're filming here on Monday.
Filming?
Taping, whatever.
Got it.
Mexico, Dos Santos brothers and Carlos Vela. Costa Rica, Marco Ureña, Rodney Wallace, David Guzman, Francisco Calvo, Kendall Waston.
That Costa Rica, by the way, all these players, they only named 23 players.
Right. So Ronald Matarrita.
All on the team. The rest of these guys are on provisional rosters, so we don't know if they're going to actually make it.
Harold Cummings for Panama. Godoy, I almost said Felipe. Not any ball. Godoy. Machado, Escobar, Murillo, Torres, Christian Martinez. Shout out
that
to the Cruz Siga.
That was the shocking one. That was the surprising one. But just looking over the Panama 35-man roster is like looking at the past 10 years of MLS, which is class.
Tarek and Gaber for Egypt, and then Betashur for Iran. So that's what we have so far. Those are some names. I'm not sure you know, Mexico probably has the leading lights, and then Costa Rica, and then after that you're...
JCO said today during the press conference, he said, the World Cup started tomorrow. The Dos Santos brothers wouldn't be on the team.
Would not be.
That's because of injury. Is it because of injury, though?
He named five players that he said if the World Cup was start, if this was the final roster, the World Cup was starting next week, these five would not be coming. And he named both Dos Santos brothers because they currently have injuries.
And also because he's a master motivator.
You can take it however you
want. He's a master motivator.
He'd have to name one of them because, you know, he said, I think it was 27 players they announced, right?
And yeah.
So if you take off five, it's only 22. You need to be great. Just for the record.
He had a limit on his character, so he just went Dos Santoses.
Yeah, the Dos Santos.
One here, Brandon from Chicago. Just read a great Players Tribune article from Pau Gasol about Becky Hammon and female coaches in the NBA. Is there anyone in a similar position in MLS or even world soccer that should give us hope that females will soon be seen as equals and given an opportunity to lead a team, or is soccer still behind the curve on equality?
Well, there's no current women on coaching staffs in MLS.
Yeah, that's kind of a – that I would say that would be maybe the first barrier you've got to knock down.
Which we don't have any – we have a couple women in front offices, including Megan Cameron at Sporting Kansas City. We have some in Colorado, I believe.
Yep, and then Atlanta's got
Lucy Rushton in Atlanta, who is part of the technical staff, an integral part of the technical staff. So I think we're maybe close in that regard in terms of coaching. We don't have anything right now. You know, obviously I think there's some very good coaches in the NWSL. I think, you know, I don't follow it as closely as I'd like.
Lauren Harvey.
I mean, that was what I was going to say.
Yeah. Laura Harvey, yeah. I was literally like going through her Wikipedia right now just to like refresh myself. But she was the first name that jumped up. Also because I think Deloy Hansen, he's kind of a maverick. He does some things that other people might not do out there.
If there was an organization, you know, that is set up to do that, to take a NWSL coach and slot her into an MLS team.
Look, if you follow NWSL
or an easier path would
USL.
Potentially be through Real
USL,
Monarchs,
yeah.
right? Which is what Mike Pecky did.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, look, if you're an NWSL, you know, die hard or you have some thoughts here, love to hear them.
Two things to think about. Cornine Diarce, French coach who took over a men's team
yep.
in the second division, and she replaced Helena Costa, who was the first, I think, top division women's coach of a men's team.
Yep.
And then for Canada, John Herdman, obviously a male, went from the women's national team to the men's national team, which kind of maybe gives you a pathway for that type
example,
of setup.
But
yeah. yeah. But what happened with Becky Hammond is Greg Popovich hired her to be an assistant, and then you're an assistant like any other assistant, which is what Pau Gasol is saying, in that pool, and she was capable. You need to see MLS coaches bring females into the youth academies, into the technical staffs, to give them opportunities.
I mean, I'll say, you know, we're at, me and Goss are at GA Cup every year. I haven't seen a female coach.
Yeah, there are females
even
there
in academy.
On,
yeah, yeah, I mean,
on academy sides,
medicals,
on operations.
Medicals,
yeah.
administration, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There's plenty of those, but no females on
and most of the people in those rooms have not played in Major League Soccer or
nope.
played at a level equal.
Nope.
That's not an excuse. It's really more opportunity.
I mean, the only named player is Dynamo is Mohamed Kalon, who's played in, you know, in Europe a lot. But most of the guys, most of the coaches that are there are not, yeah, not established players.
Well, Ben Mascheru.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about him.
All right. We're far too far. Wait, no, I will refuse to go down this GA Cup hole with the two of you. It's all about opportunity. Would love to see more women get that opportunity in Major League Soccer and otherwise. Let us know what you think. 401-206-0-MLS. That's a hot take hotline. ExtraTimeMLSsoccer.com is the email. Big thanks to Dave Goss, Bim Bear, Matt Doyle, Alexi Lawless, and you to listening. We'll see you on Thursday.